What's up, everybody? Sunnyside, episode 9. I got a special guest today. Got Trevor Kevalot, Chicago comedian, cut his teeth in LA. Now, co-founder of the dojo, right?
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah. What's going on, man?
Hi, man. Good to be on this. Yes, I am Trevor Kevalot. I'm originally from Chicago land. I'm not actually from the city of Chicago. I'm from the west suburbs. People that are from the Chicago land area understand that if you say you're from Chicago and you're not, you're a poser and you just, all you do is get shit for it. So I'm from a nice suburb called Naperville, Illinois, which is about a half hour west of Chicago, kind of a WASPy neighborhood. I grew up, it was more blue collar mixed with white collar when I was there when I grew up, and then in 2000 it got rated number one place to raise your kids by Ford magazine.
That's pretty great.
Like, legitimately, this town became so prolific in suburbia that there's rumors that Desperate Housewives was actually mirrored off this town.
Oh, shit.
So my parents, coming from a family of seven, basically couldn't afford to live there before this. And then obviously after this, so they moved further and further away from Naperville and different suburbs around Chicago. So, but I consider myself a Chicagoland native, but an LA comic. I didn't do a lot of comedy in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I did some open mics, some shows. There was a big bar I worked at and I ended up running after working there for 10 years.
What bar was that?
It was called the Lodge at Four Lakes in this little town called Lisle, Illinois, which is next to Naperville. So the cool thing about this place, it's this 5,000 to 6,000 person complex that's all condominiums and condominiums and apartments, and it's got actual four lakes that were built there back in the day, and this big ski hill. So you've got this like this community within a small city next to a big, you know, town of people that don't leave, and then there's this enormous bar restaurant situated right in the middle called the Lodge, which used to be called the Pub and is now Base Camp. It holds like 500 people. It's got two huge patios. There's a pool next to it. It's really fucking cool.
That's awesome.
And can I swear on this?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Fuck yeah.
Just making sure.
Hell fucking cunting yeah, right, motherfucker.
Now we're talking. This motherfucker. So I started there forever ago, and I would do 10 to 15 minutes up front before bands. They had no idea I was performing.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of time for somebody that hasn't really gotten into comedy. At the time I was I was at Second City doing improv, comedy and writing I was there for a couple of years, just training, nothing exciting, but I learned, you know, I was taught and kind of trained a little bit and learned like the techniques, basic, you know, foundation and techniques. I had my first instructor, fucking cool ass dude. He emailed me. I forgot his name, but
but he's definitely cool. Yeah.
Yes.
I've done it before. It's like that. Literally, is every interaction that I usually have is I remember somebody is like really awesome, or they have like a specific characteristic about them.
But I saved the email. I still have the email, and every once in a while I go back because I emailed him and Kevin Farley, Chris Farley's brother, and they're just emails I saved from when I was a lot younger. Just interactions, and I forgot his name, super fucking cool dude, and he told me I was a natural, and he goes, whatever you do, keep at it and don't quit, you're a natural.
That's encouraging. I really appreciate that whenever people encourage other people.
And I quit a lot. I quit over and over and over, but I kept coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing improv, I did a little bit of stand-up, and I really honed my skills was writing online content for my own website and another website as a company my sister owned. And I worked with her, started her company from the ground up, and did all the online content, and I started hosting like live events, like small and large, like in LA, in Chicago, in Vegas mostly. So I was like hosting these events, I'd be on stage. We'd have like these models or fighters come out, and I'd like kind of like interact with them and do stuff. And I was kind of like a ringleader of doing all this. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it, and they pushed me to do that. And you know, because I was getting on a stage, getting on a microphone, and 99% of the time I was half in the bag, so it was just easy for me to just not feel the jitters because I just boozed it away. But that was, you know, and then I, like I said, I opened for these bands, and there's, you know, there's a crowd of, you know, 200-300 people coming in. They don't want to see some fucking hack comic opening. And I was just, at that time, I was writing all, like, shock comedy, because Andrew Dice Clay was one of my biggest inspirations as a kid. Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, and ADC, and then when I came across Richard Jenny, that's where it just, he's just absolutely fucking brilliant, was brilliant, he's dead, but...
Yeah, that's usually the case, like, after you die, then all of a sudden you're brilliant, but when you're alive, you're just an asshole.
Kind of like Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
No, that guy was an asshole. Yeah. Calling someone a cunt, like, look at this bitch, she's a cunt! Look at this cunt!
Yeah.
Anger.
Yeah, it was cool, you know, and then I kind of drifted away, and this whole time, I've been a heavy drinker, and that's kind of what, I feel like that was my, what stopped me from getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. That and, you know, I get into these shitty relationships, and I always want to move to L.A. I moved to L.A. like 3 or 4 times before I actually stuck in L.A., so finally moved to L.A. for good almost 6 years ago, and that's where I really cut my teeth with stand-up, and I was kind of... I, at first, it was, you know, I was still drinking and having fun. I was going up on stage, and I was getting the laughs, and I didn't realize, because I didn't have anyone really truly mentoring me at the time. It was people that mentored me in the past, the stuff I had to remember, but it was like foggy because I'm fucking old, and it's like trying to remember what they taught me 10, 15 years ago, you know. And I was like, and I realized, like, after really diving into the scene, it's like, you know, the one thing that, and I'm not a pro by any means. I'm a pro at certain things, but strictly stand up, I'd say I'm like middle under. Like I'm not a beginner, but I'm not a pro, and I'm like kind of like close to the middle. That's just where I'm at. I'm very comfortable on stage. I have fun, but I was chasing the laughs before I chased my voice, and that was where I fucked up, because I had this preconceived notion that comedy's about making people laugh, which it is, but I wasn't sticking to the writing, to the process, to learning about yourself, and to finding your voice, which is the most important thing, is finding your voice. It's like if you try to be somebody else a million, you know, that's all you're trying to do is, I want to be the next Dave Chappelle, I want to be the next George Carlin, I want to be the next, you know, whatever, Joe Rogan, you're not going to make it, you know. It's like the originals are the ones who make it, so... That was something that I battled with at the beginning, and I realized, I was like, I gotta find my voice. Yeah. And I had this, honestly, it was a killer set. It was fucking hilarious. It was stupid, and it was funny, and it was kind of disgusting, but funny at the same time. And it was completely fake. I made it up. 100% was it. 100% was fake. There was no
authenticity behind it.
Not one, but I sold it very well. And one day I just said, I can't do this ever again. This is fake.
What was the turning point? Like, whenever you remember exactly?
It was after I got sober. I did it 1 or 2 times, and then the comic that followed me is a buddy of mine, Matt Gallagher. He's a sobriety guy too. He's a buddy of mine, and he was just like, "What the fuck was that?" He's like, and I didn't. The thing was, now that I was sober, I was like, and I was selling it. People were laughing and oohing and aahing. I was like, that's not me. Like, I can do all that, but write about something that actually happens.
Yeah, it feels gross to do that.
Yeah, so it's like giving that extra 1% to something that you can give because you actually experienced it. Where this was just a funny thing I wrote. Like, this is something I would write for, like, a TV show or for something. But then Sam Tripoli, my business partner, my dear friend, one of my closest friends in comedy, you know, he would... occasionally just kind of like snap at me in a good way. Like, he was like, he's a very like high energy motherfucker, and he was like, write what you know, that's it. He's like, just write what you know. He's like, write about your day, write a joke about your day. And he would tell me, write 5 jokes a day, just do that. He goes, they can all suck, but you have to get in that process of writing. So
would you say is like your kind of like go-to writing things? I like to go for walks. I like to just sit down and like revisit material that I've recorded and then kind of just pick out little jokes here and there and kind of like focus on a structure. What would you say is your like go-to writing?
See, I had a cheat code. When I was running the Dojo of Comedy, I had sometimes 2 shows up in the I call it the main showroom. And then I started this small room called the Dojo Annex on the main floor of Sycamore Tavern in Hollywood, which is no longer. It's gone. It's for sale. People ask me about it still to this day. What's going on there? And I'm like, I haven't worked there in 8 months. It's gone. It's literally for sale. Like, it's not happening. Especially now that California is shut down again. Like, shut down.
So did you see, like in California? Because, like, I know in Austin a lot of businesses really, really suffered. In California, was it, like, a huge impact?
Yeah. Like, it's... They basically came out in June of the woodwork... Not woodwork. They came out of the what was it? Like, the cloud... the dust. And... Then
out of the mist.
Yeah, out of the mist. They allowed it was like a week. They allowed indoor dining at, and like at 50% capacity and all this. And then bam, like that same week was the George Floyd protests. So they pulled it back, the indoor dining. Then there was all these curfews and shutdowns again. And it's just been a complete disaster. Because I know a lot of bar owners, club owners, restaurant owners, people that work just work in it, not just own, are like, I talked to a good friend of mine who runs a huge, like, really popular place in West Hollywood today, and they're shut down for another 3 or 4 weeks, and he just no one knows what to do because they're not working, and they're not getting unemployment either now. But the unemployment that people are getting, the state unemployment, is not enough to live on. The entire unemployment for the month isn't even enough for just your rent.
Yeah.
So it's just, I don't know what their plan is politically, I don't know, or socially. It's just, they're not doing it right. Like, if you want to shut people down, provide people the UBI, free health care, and a stimulus check. Like, if you're going to do that, the government needs to step in and say, since we shut you down, we're going to help you. They're not helping anybody. Hmm. That's where everybody across the playing field agrees. Red, blue, green, purple, whatever you believe in, everyone's saying the same thing. If you're going to shut us down, you need to give us money to survive, to pay our rent, to pay our bills, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, you can't just change professions at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, and that's, you know, ultimately what it is some people are doing. So, I mean, I moved. I moved out of California. My calendar for 2020 before the shutdown was like, this is going to be my best year of my life professionally, because 2019 was amazing. Okay. And professionally it was one of the best years of my life. Personally, it was one of the hardest years of my life, but I was like so stoked for 2020. I had so much going on. I had big shows. I was working with a couple networks on stuff, like, but as a producer behind the scenes, but like providing this space and then saying I can also do all these other things. You know, so I had this thing, this gift, which was the dojo at Sycamore. So back to you were saying my writing style. It's fluctuated because when I was at the dojo, I was able to cheat. I had a cheat code because I could go on stage and I was stage writing. So I'd like have an idea, jot it down, think about it that day, like kind of work it out with friends in between like discussions, go on stage and work it out rather than actually do the work, which is writing out the joke. And I realized, because I started writing out every joke the past probably couple months since I moved here, is writing it down helps the thoughts from your thoughts to your hand to the paper and then back and forth. So there's this actual like physical process, or if you're typing, either way. But there's this process of being able to get it down, and it's easy to remember because you say it in your head as you're writing and you're writing. So there's like these extra steps to help with the process that I was skipping because I was the boss. I could just go up anytime I wanted and get my stage time, which was usually just 5 minutes.
That's where I see the beauty of being a host for a show, is that you can actually have more times, because it's like so many times where you go up there to an open mic, there's only like 5 minutes that you have.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's it for the day. Like, you just have those 5 minutes right there, but you could just hit the circuit.
Yeah.
Like one more time, hit it again, go again, and you can practice 20 minutes throughout that, or 20, 30 minutes throughout that show.
Yeah, so. I mean, cool thing about hosting is, I mean, the best hosts of my life I've seen, they come out, they do time up front, they get the crowd going, they bring out the first performer, and then they keep the show moving, and they keep their little... They're in betweens to less than a minute. I've seen hosts that do 6 minutes in between, and I timed them. I've seen hosts that
For every comic?
Yeah, for every comics. There's amazing. This guy is a great comic.
I think keep that pace.
But it was, I was like, and we were joking. It got so bad. I'm like, is he working on his Netflix special? Is he working on his special? Like, he did more time than some of the comics booked on the show. Because he's giving these new comics a chance because my club was a new club and it was the dojo, which is, you know, a place to work out. And that's essentially what Sam Trippi and I agreed to, was this is a workout room for not just pro comics, but everybody, you know, young comics, new comics.
That's nice.
You know, and it gives everyone a chance to just get better. Sam believes so much in the art form and is one of literally the hardest working and best people in LA comedy scene that I've ever interacted with, ever met. And, you know, he's essentially was the face for the longest time. So, and is still the face, you know, but it helped me get better, you know, in several different ways, a comic, a producer, a promoter, which I fucking hate that word, because promoters is just, it's always like a promoter's like attributed with like a dude that's trying to fuck, you know, that's like handing out free bottles, you know, or trying to get chicks. Oh, get five chicks in here and you'll get a free bottle of fucking Well vodka. And it's just like he gets these like skanks with fake IDs. Yeah. These skanks with fake IDs. Yeah. It's like, that are from like Norway or something, and it's like, and they're like fucking 19 or something, and it's like, oh, I got these hot chicks in here, man. You know, and it's like,
they just learned how to read.
Yeah, that's what I think of when I hear promoter. That's what I think. And people are like, no, you're a promoter. I go, I don't promote though.
Yeah.
I go, I'm up here. I have to like make sure everything is working, and like, as an employee of the bar itself, and as a producer of the show. If I was producing my own show or overseeing a show, because I didn't produce all the shows. I like quote unquote executive produced. I oversaw everything from above, where I would book independent producers or promoters, new people, pros, you know, middle. They would book the comics in the show. So it was when it came to money, that was their situation. If they paid the comics, they paid the comics. If they didn't, they didn't. It was up to them. It wasn't up to me. I would produce a handful of my shows. If there was enough people there and it was a good show, I'd pay. And if I couldn't, there's shows where there's fucking seven people in the room and I let them all in for free because we needed an audience. Mm. And then there's 10 comics on the show. And then since I had the annex, which was the small showroom on the main floor, which was also an open mic room, small showroom, I would have the newer young comics come up and hang out. And the rule at the dojo was, if you're a comic, you get in for free no matter what. As long as you're actually pursuing comedy, not just saying that to get in for free.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have shows where I would have the person working the door write down everybody's name, and I'd say, look up everybody, make sure they're comics, and not just saying that. Because that was the thing at the Comedy Store. We adopted a lot of their philosophy at the dojo because Sam's a paid regular and pass at the Comedy Store, and he put on the biggest shows at the Comedy Store for a year or two. Comedy Chaos, which was, I think, once or twice a month, and would sell out every show in the main room. So I adopted a lot of the philosophies they did there to help the comedy community. And then I realized, I was like, I was feeling more fulfilled helping and create something than I was like getting that 5 minutes of laughs. Because I knew I could get the laughs. And I was like, it was always kind of funny, or like when I was drunk, I was funny. It was like, there's like, the laughs were there. It was like, this is, to me, it was way more exciting building something because not a lot of people wanted to do it. And I was like, this is way more exciting.
Yeah, it's always like great to be able to like build people up. And like, I agree with you. I completely feel like rewarded whenever I can provide that kind of thing for somebody else.
Yeah, and I kept saying, I don't know if you were there, but I was like, I will never give unwarranted advice to anybody. Sometimes I catch myself like giving some sort of, and I will stop, and I'm like, if you don't want to hear me, that's fine. I'm like, I'll shut the fuck up. I will stop myself because I catch myself like trying to give. I was like, I'm not giving advice. I just want to help people.
Yeah, you're trying to give off those supportive dad vibes.
Yes, right? Thank you. Yeah. Supportive dad vibe. Like, I just want to help, and you know, and I tell people I'm not like this big time comic. We're around a lot of very successful and powerful people.
You understand things and you have an insight that a lot of people can find very, very valuable.
And, I worked with some amazing comics that are, you know, might not be the most popular, but actual comedy grinders, some of the mm-hmm. biggest grinders in the business, and they taught me so much. And it's like, fuck, like so even a sentence, like it's changed my life. Ian Edwards was fucking, this guy's brilliant comic and writer. There's a show a few years ago. I think it was right before I got sober. We were doing a show and the host of the producer of the show, he was like, and this was at my club, and he's like, you want to go up? I go, I don't know. And Ian Edwards was there, and he goes, what the fuck, man? I go, what? He goes, don't you ever pass up stage time. He goes, I'm a professional combo. He goes, I would never pass up stage time. He looked at me. I go, you're fucking right, Ian. He goes, I'm right. And he, you know, shook my hand, gave me love, went up, closed out the show, did like a 9-minute set. It was fun. It was great. I felt, it's like going to the gym. You're never going to feel bad.
Yeah.
You go to the gym. Okay, I feel good. Yeah. I went to the gym.
At first, it's like when like committing to the...
Mental part of it.
Committing to a sponsor, which reminds me, we got to take a sponsor break because we need to get paid, and that is why we do this. So guys, please enjoy the silence and the sudden break. We love you. And we are back. So earlier you were telling me about the... about your time in California, mm-hmm. you know, you went through the Comedy Store. That's where you got the dojo up and running, and you had all that experience after moving from Chicago.
Yeah,
tell me about that.
So, my particular skill set, as Liam Neeson would say, is I have, I'm good at running, like a show, like a an event or something like that. I've been doing that basically since high school. I'm really good at just kind of overseeing everything and making sure everything works. I was in corporate America as a young adult, and I quit that and got into hospitality at the ground level, very ground level, below ground level, like parking lot security guard. Like, that's how low it was.
Hell yeah.
And worked my way all the way up to AGM, events guy, host, all this shit of the big bar I used to work at outside Chicago, the Lodge. So I had this just a good knack on how to just run events and see things and cross promote and bring this company and this person and be like, okay, wait, if we have this, we should do this. And just, I have like this kind of like puzzle pieces in my head that I like to put together. It's just fun for me. And I kind of took that experience. Then I moved to LA, like I said, about 6 years ago. I worked at a bar, started out at the very bottom as a fucking busboy food runner of a huge sports bar right in the heart of Hollywood. That's the place I ended up running. It used to be called Happy Endings. Then it became Sycamore Tavern. Yeah. And I remember...
Did they have Asian cuisine there?
Kind of. In the basement, locked up.
They also made shoes out there.
Yeah. Really good. Not Nikes, Nikes. And I got a job there. I needed it. I was sleeping on my friend's couch. And, you know, I got this this low-end job. And I was like, it kind of... hurt because I was not hurt. I'm grateful for what they did, but it was like I sent my resume out to like 95 places, and you basically,
this is all I get.
Yeah, exactly. And my buddy offered, I was friends with the guys that worked there. They offered me a job. A lot of them were actually from Chicagoland, so they offered me the job. I took it on the spot. I needed it. I was broke. It was like $18 in my name, living my friend's couch. Like, I can't do this, you know. No car at the time, just scraping by, trying to do the whole thing. Got the job there, and then I eventually ended up running the place. And then, you know, a couple years later, or a year or two later, they rebranded to Sycamore Tavern. They brought me back because I was in Chicago taking care of my dad, who was sick, and my mom. And then went back to L.A. They rehired me. I was like server. And then like a year later, after a lot of management changes, I ended up getting bumped up to manager. Then like a month later, they fired the head... the lead manager. I became essentially the lead manager. The owners, they had this big event space upstairs, beautiful space. And they're like, what do you think we could do with it? We have events up there now. We want to get rid of it because it doesn't coincide with the vision, their vision of what they want out of the restaurant. And I was like, I'm a comedian. I've been doing shows up there. And now I moved here to do comedy. And they're like, and one of the owners is like, fuck it, just make it a comedy room. I go, are you sure? He goes, yeah. I go, okay. He goes, and then one of the last things he said to me in that meet, actually the last thing is he was like, He goes, you moved here to do comedy. And he goes, now you got your own room. It's pretty cool, huh? And I was like, yeah. Motherfucker, I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
Did you know any comedians at that
point? Oh, yeah. I knew a lot. I was working with, I don't want to name drop, but I was working with some really good, solid comics and some, like, names. Guys on TV shows, guys have been touring and headlining for years, you know, like, because they, in L.A., like, almost every comic will get stage time, and will take stage time in front of an actual crowd. There's a difference between a crowd and a like an open mic. Mm-hmm. So if you have a crowd of like 20 people, a lot of stand-up comics will be like, oh, dude, really? You're inviting? Like, I'll jump on your show and do 10 minutes. Can I do 20? Can I work this out? Fuck yeah. It's like very, stage time is every comic is like stage time, which is true to a certain degree, I think. Because if you're at a coffee shop telling jokes to people that aren't paying attention and they're all on their laptop, it's not stage time. It's you just talking into a microphone. Like, there has to be some sort of interaction with somebody. Yeah. But it's most of the time it is, you know, it's better to go up than not go up, like we said earlier with, you know, my story with Ian Edwards. But it was you know, I got the room and then I sat on it for a while and I was just like, I can do this. And I was like, I was really nervous by myself just sitting there like at work. I'm like, I can do this. I was like, I've done this shit, but this is way different. This is in LA, in Hollywood, doing in the industry I want to be in. This is
Mom, I made it.
Yeah. I was like, this is all the stuff I've been talking about my whole life. It's just like, it was just given to me. And I'm like, but it was like, given to me in a way where it was like, do what you can, but we're going to help you by giving you the space. But it's not like I was, it's not like they said, oh, here's the company credit card, go do what you need.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time and my own money in there. The sweat equity, I can't even tell you. It'd be probably at least $50,000 in sweat equity, maybe $100,000. I put so much in. I would go in there my days off and clean the place. Because I loved it. I just loved it.
Put my heart in that room. That's passion, though. Yeah. That's what you got to be doing.
We'd be closed Sundays. I went in there on a Sunday because I was a manager. I'd open up and I'd just absolutely crank Tool. It was always Tool because that's my band.
Yeah.
So I'd crank Tool and I would sweep and mop the entire room and straighten it up and I'd just sit in there. I'd be done. I'd spend 2 hours cleaning the room and then I'd just sit there with the music just blasting. And I'm like, I feel good. I'm going to go out and do, like, whatever.
That's therapeutic right there.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, cleaning for me is very therapeutic. Mm-hmm. So, and it was, like, it was also, I don't want to say spiritual, but kind of like a thing where it's, like, you're touching the space and I'm cleaning the space. Instead of having someone do it, I'm doing it and kind of giving back to it.
Like touching your genitals and cleaning your genitals.
Exactly that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like getting all the dirt off.
Get the duck butter out of there.
All them dinkleberries up out of there.
Yeah, so it was, you know, it was, and then, you know, I sat on, like I said, I texted Sam Tripoli. He called me back and he's like, what the fuck? Because I love him, but he's always like high energy. And he's like, what do you mean? And I go, I got the room, it's mine. He goes, what the fuck, what do you mean? I go, it's mine. I go, it's, the owners gave me basically the green light to do whatever I want. And I told my, turn it into a comedy club, and they're like, oh my god, he's like, we gotta meet, I have all these ideas. So the Dojo of Comedy is actually Sam's name. He brought the name there because he was doing branded shows called the Dojo of Comedy before we branded the room. That I was doing my own shows, he was doing shows there, like splitting time with another promoter, and I was on those shows. I was doing my own shows, which I wouldn't even host. Like, I hosted one show and it was just because usually when I was, there was a show, I was actually working too. So I couldn't host. Hosting, you really have to be present with the show. And when I'm managing the bar and managing the, you know, the actual, you know, comedy club, it's impossible.
That sounds impossible.
So I got it going. Sam, you know, we had probably 3 to 5 meetings a week. We met constantly. We talked with a lot of comedians, young and new producers and promoters, people that were trying to, like, kind of find a way in. And this was a good starter room for a lot of people, including myself. You know, this was a new thing, but it's something I've literally been doing for 15 years. So, but it was, like I said before, in the location, in the industry, like, at the place I worked, it was like you could not have written a better you know, script or story. So that was November, October, November is when I got the go ahead. And then November is when we kind of started launching it. And then was that following February is when I got sober. So after that happened is when really, about a year after that is when things really started to fly. But that first year of sobriety, it was tough because I was doing all this work and not being able to like go out and just kind of let loose.
Yeah, do you mind telling me the story of
how
you became sober?
Yeah. So February 27th, 28th, I was, I used to drink, I used to do coke.
What year was it?
2018. It'll be 3 years.
The moon was red.
Yeah. I just said 1,000 days
yesterday. The year of the dragon.
Yeah. was it 2018? February 28th, 2018. Where was I? San Diego. So
that's why you got sober, because you couldn't remember.
Yeah, I couldn't remember shit, yeah. This is like, just old man shit. I literally went down to San Diego for a couple days with my homie, who was actually from Chicagoland and was living in Anaheim. We went out. I was like, I need to get out of L.A. I mean, Hollywood is just going to be such a toxic place, and it's like, I just need to get out. So we went to San Diego for a couple days just to like get away from the L.A. scene and whatnot and just have a good time. And all I wanted to do was literally sit on a beach, smoke weed, drink Coronas, and shoot Jameson.
You ever been down to, what is it, Black's Beach down there? The nude beach?
No, I haven't.
Oh, yeah, my buddy Jaden, he's also a comedian. He was telling me this really funny story about how I don't really want to tell his story and everything, but it was a nude beach. But, sorry, Jaden, I'm going to tell your story. But, he was telling me about, like, literally yesterday we went to meet up, and he told me about how he went down there with some people, and there's this woman with the nicest ass he ever seen in his entire life. Yeah. Just walking there, just butt-ass naked, and you know, on Black's Beach. And they look over and they see like this homeless dude in the bushes with a fucking meat hammer underneath it, like just fucking just jacking it, both hands at this fucking lady and everything. And like, there's, oh shit, what do we do? I mean, it's like clear, it's far away, so you didn't really worry about it. But then like this woman comes up to him and goes, hey, did you guys see that guy jacking off in the bushes? And they're like, nah, we didn't.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
That was to say. So, anyway, so I was jacking off in Black's Beach one day. When I was homeless down there, and I was the homeless guy.
That was me.
Yeah. No big deal.
Oh god.
It was actually a baguette that I had.
A baguette.
Yeah, it was a baguette. I was holding a baguette, not a big old meat hammer.
It was a baguette.
Yeah. So I mean, what'd you do in San Diego?
Yeah, I just went down there to just literally just chill and let loose. My buddy's like, he had a different idea. He brought some coke. I started doing coke when I moved to LA. I'd never done it in my life before then. So, never touched it, anything. Never even sniffed it a little bit. Never tasted it. Never did a nummy. Stayed away for completely, but I always wanted to try it. When I moved to LA, I was like, ooh, this is fun. And, I went through ups and downs with it, but I never got like...
Yeah, the Smoky White Devil is really fun at first.
Yeah, but it was never like I needed to get through the day or I needed to do this. And it was a party favor. It was something to keep drinking at the end of the night or you know whatever. So it was never like there are plenty of times where it didn't.
You know
get
what's
out of
a
hand,
really but... fun drinking game to do that? You know, you can do it tonight with your water or whatever it is you're drinking. Every time somebody, because we're going to the Lucky Duck open mic hosted by Marty Clark.
Yeah.
Tonight, it's like a sign-ups at, I think, 6. Starts at 6.
Yeah.
And then the show is going to be at, like, 7:30, maybe 8.
Okay.
Everything. But there's a fun little drinking game that some of the comics came up with where every time somebody does a joke about cocaine, you take a drink. And like, so you're going to be rather hydrated by the end of the night, but everyone else is going to be
pissing my pants.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. So I was down there and then, we got pretty rocked. So he was, whatever he's doing, but I forgot where it was. We were outside of a bar, restaurant, whatever it was. It was Denny's. That's what it was. It was like a fucking Denny's or something. And
a lot of people have come to God moments at Denny's.
Yes. Yeah, that was That's where it happened. Yeah. And so I was like all fucked up, standing outside of his truck, and someone came behind me and just fucking knifed me right in the neck.
Oh fuck, dude.
Yeah, right by my carotid artery.
Oh, dude, I see the scar. You guys can't see the scar, but it's fucking wicked.
Yeah.
It's like you got in a fight with Wolverine, bro.
Yeah, I got shanked right there. I was fucked up. I don't know what they looked like, man, woman, what race, anything. And then they took off running. So yeah. I figured that at first I'm like, all right, they're trying to, you know, carjack us because my buddy has this nice truck, and I was standing outside his truck with the music blaring. He's inside, and then I'm like, they're trying to rob me. And then I was like, fuck.
I saw your set. You're not funny.
That's actually, I do a joke that is exactly that. That's the punchline.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, for real.
Oh, oh
legit. Man. Yeah. So I was like, fuck, and I'm like, I didn't know what was going on because I was fucked up, but I was like, there was like that 15, 20 seconds of not coherent where I kind of blacked out because your brain will black out, you know, to protect itself. I somehow managed to like keep it together, and then I ran across, you know, grabbed my shit and I ran across the street and I went to this restaurant my buddy was working at. I went inside to look and there was like this cut that was just like bleeding a little bit, and I was like, fuck, I gotta clean this up, I don't wanna get infected. So I'm like, I take napkin, soap, start washing it, and then all of a sudden, the fucking blood starts like pouring out. And I'm not like squirting like in the movies.
Yeah.
I was a gusher, not a squirter. Yeah. So if anyone knows the difference, you know the difference.
Dude, one of them gets on your fucking work pants, and the other one just makes you happy.
Yeah, and it just started oozing out and gushing. I was like, oh shit, and then I call my buddy. As I'm holding my, trying to, you know, hold it, I call my buddy and I'm like, dude, I'm bleeding out bad. And he's over at the restaurant within a couple minutes, kicks the door open, and he's like, oh my God, what the fuck? There's blood everywhere.
Oh my God.
It's like something out of like almost like a comedy. I take the, you know, the napkins or towels from the bar or from the bathroom. There's just blood everywhere. He takes his sweatshirt off. He gives it to me. I, you know, tie my neck up. And we fucking run out of the restaurant, jump in his truck, and we fly, just haul ass to the fucking hospital. And he's been partying too. And he's got like Swedish House Mafia just cranked, just techno to bomb, bomb, bomb. And I look over and he's driving, just like eyes peeled and just fucking scooping coke on the way to the hospital. And I was like sitting there and I bled out so much, my left ear was filled with blood. Oh, I couldn't hear. It was just like the vibration of the music, and then my right ear I could hear, but I was like so fucked up because I was drunk, stoned, and coked out. So I'm like spun, you know? And I'm like, look over, and he's just like, fuck, man. You know, just doing fucking key bumps. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, we're gonna fucking die on the way to the hospital. I'm like, I'm gonna die twice. Like, this is fucked up. The first hospital we get to is shut down, as in no longer in existence, closed, 86th. I'm like, dude, he goes, fuck, fuck. He starts screaming. He's like, I gotta find another one. Finds another hospital. We drive to that hospital, a good 20 minutes from when I got stuck, actually before that, when he got to the restaurant that I was, you know, the bathroom where I was, to the actual hospital. And then we finally get there. We, you know, we pull up to the ER. He just slammed on the brakes. And we walk in, kick the doors open. And there's like fucking old people in there, like my back, my hip, whatever. And here comes two fucking big fucking Chicago guys. One's just soaked in blood, and the place just fucking lit up. It was like a fucking legit like TV show Black Code or whatever, Code Black,
yeah,
or ER. And they take me in there, and there's 20 people trying to save my life, and I'm sitting there cracking jokes because I'm fucked up, and I'm deflecting how fucking wild this is, and I'm like, I'm not accepting it because I'm just like, I don't want to like get there. Like emotionally, this is too fucked up. So finally it came to, and it was, they're like, we don't know if they hit an artery. We need to do a blood transfusion. We have to, you know, perform emergency surgery right now. We don't know. We can't see what's going on in there, blah, blah, blah. The surgeon starts telling me this. And that's when I kind of like, that was it. It was like a quarterback down by six. You know, 30 seconds left, you know, marching down the field kind of thing. I went right into the pocket, and I was just like, oh, shit. And that's where I just completely, everything just, I, like, blacked out in a different way where I came to. So, yeah.
Where it's like, you know, everything's going to be fine kind, yeah, of thing?
Or? No, I was the opposite. That's where I was like, I was worried. That's when I was like, shit. He's like, you lost a lot of blood. We need to do a blood transfusion. We need to know everything, but if you know this. And I was like, oh my God. And I was just like, all right, I'm A positive. I'm not, I don't have any allergies or allergic reactions. I just started rattling shit off. I was like, and when I was 9, I fell down. I hit my lip and my stitches. I've never broken any bones. Wait, I think my
sister's name is Kathy.
Yeah. I was like, I broke my ribs a few years ago in jiu-jitsu.
I always wanted to be a dancer.
Yeah. I was like, I got bad teeth, like stupid shit. I was like, I've been drinking, I'm stoned, I was doing coke. I'm like, I was just like everything. I didn't give a shit because this was my like deathbed moment.
Yeah.
And it was the worst part was when they're like, they put me under. So like, oh, we're going to put the mask on you. We're going to do the surgery, blah, blah, blah. I told him, I'm A positive, but so put the mask on. He's like, just start breathing. And I was just like rattling, still talking. Like, Jesus Christ, dude. Like, the coke hit again. It's like, here comes the second wave of the blow.
You lay down again, and then all of a sudden that drip hits
you. Yeah.
And then
you're just wait a second. Okay. Let me tell you this great story.
Whoa.
So yeah. I literally said, I had the mask on, and I said, don't let me die. Please don't let me die. I've got way too much going on in my life. I go, you can't let me die. And they're like, you're in good hands. You're going to be okay. And I was like, no, you don't understand. You can't let me die. And I was like, I was thinking about the dojo, and I was thinking about what I was doing with my life. And I was like, I cannot fucking, like, just go. Like, I was like, you can't. Like, there wasn't to me, it was like I was arguing with myself rather than the surgeons who were like, we're going to fix this guy. But it was like, I can't die. I can't. Like, that's it. There's no discussion. It can't happen. And he was like, you know, he's like, just count backwards. And I was like, I started crying and praying. And I was like, that was it. And then I woke up and I thought I was dead at first.
I was just thinking about how that must have been really, really intense. Just be like, you're aware that if I breathe in right now, I might wake up.
Yeah, that could be my last breath. So and I do this, I gave myself a tag once because I used to tell this story as a set. And I set up, I was like, please don't let me die. I started crying. I go, you can't let me die. I go, I didn't get any time off. My time off requested. I don't have any days off or approved time off or whatever it was. I was like, please don't let me die.
I've been bruising some bananas for banana bread, and I was really committing this time to make that.
I was like, you can't let me die. I can't get any time off. You can't let me die. I need to go back to work. I was like, that was the, you know.
My car is almost paid off.
Yeah. Because I've actually been, I did this set at a show, and this girl was bawling her eyes out in front because a similar thing happened to her in San Diego. So
what's with people getting stabbed in the fucking
neck?
I don't
know, man. It was fucking wild.
They got Jack the Stabber up in fucking San Diego, dude.
Yeah, I was like, I had to hang out in San Diego.
It was just Navy guys and fucking Mustangs trying to fucking dodge rape charges.
Close the border. So, yeah, and then I woke up in this hospital room and I was like, I thought I was dead. And I was just like, and I started feeling my fingers, and that's like a thing where if you can feel stuff, you're not dead physically. And I started feeling my fingers and moving them around, and I was just like, oh my God. And I woke up, and there's fucking 3 detectives in there. There's nurses, there's surgeons. And dude, it was like less than a minute after being awake, these cops just started asking me all these questions. And I didn't know, dude. I was coming out of a fucking surgery with 3 different drugs in my body and whatever they put inside of me. And I was like, I don't know, shit.
Yeah.
But I sat in that room for 12 hours and went through some fucking real low moments of emotional vulnerability. And I was just like, how did I get here? I'm a good dude. I'm like, I don't fucking hurt people. I'm not trying out there.
What they thought you were up to something.
They didn't. They just wanted to know. They asked me all these questions. Where were you? Who were you with? Da, 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 da. And I didn't know. I was like, came out of a surgery, a life-threatening surgery where I was fucked up to begin with. I'm like, I don't know, dude. Like, someone stabbed me. That's all I know. And I'm here and I'm alive and I don't know where my friend is. That was the other thing. He took off. He was worried because he was fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, and he took off. And I understand, like, you know,
at that moment, there's really nothing you could do.
Yeah, he's kind of he's a little bit of a hood dude, so like he gets it. Like,
yeah,
you stick around, they're gonna be like, all right, so what's going on here? You know, and he was like, no, I'll come back later. I'll send you a cab or something.
Yeah.
So
I have drugs on me.
Yeah. Like, it's like, and I've been doing that.
These detectives literally detect.
Yeah.
So, and it's not going to be hard.
The canine unit is going nuts right now outside.
Just from smelling your nasal cavity, they're just sort of, you got a whole like they're trying to hunt foxes out of your nose, getting like just a bunch of dogs just running up on you,
just licking your nose.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like, obviously, the turning point, and then it was like, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm like, I don't want to do this. I go, how did I get here? Why me? You know, not a bad dude. I'm a good dude. I help people. I love people. Like, well, and I think about every bad thing I've ever done. I'm like, is this, you know, like all this karma coming back? And I'm like, I'm not that bad.
I knew I was going to pay for masturbating at that fucking playground.
Yeah.
It's like, there was no one there, God.
It's like, I beat up people, but they deserved it. And, you know, I was like, wait, I've never beat up my little
they
brother.
They were of the devil, God.
Yeah. It's like, it's all this. And then the hardest thing though was having to call my mom and tell her and like, just not completely lose it on the phone. And I called my mom and told her, and I was just like, my parents, they're older. My dad was, you know, old, you know, he died a year ago, but he was like,
I'm sorry to hear
sick.
That.
Thank you. And just not well. But still there. And my mom, you know, and I have to call and tell them, you know, and then I was like, I'll call dad later. Just let him know I'm okay. Cause I didn't want a rumor getting back to them. So I prevented the rumor from getting back to them. So that was it. I sat in a hotel. it's nice in some hotels I've been in. hospital room for like 12, 14 hours, and then I left, and that was it.
Hell yeah.
And it just, I was like, fuck.
A knife wound and some fresh blood.
Yeah, yeah. And, excuse me. And that was it, yeah. And then I got back, and I went 90 days without anything. Without going to a meeting or a class or any of that shit. And then my buddy took me to an AA meeting, and I fuck with AA, but it's not my thing. Hmm. But I still go. Like, I'll go. I've been to a couple meetings here. It's just nice to be around those people.
Yeah.
People that are like dealing with the same shit, because it's people that are like, oh, you know, I quit drinking too, but they still drink. I was like, I make a conscious effort every single day not to drink. And when I go out to mics or shows or bars or restaurants or everything,
they test it every time.
Yeah, where people are having even just one or two, I make the conscious choice not to and to never do it. So, you know, that's the difference of knowing you can have a couple drinks and be okay versus knowing that I know that if I had a couple drinks, I'd be fine. I know that. The problem is I don't know when I wouldn't be fine.
Yeah.
I don't know when I'm going to get crazy. I don't know when I'm going to get that third shot of Jameson and I'm going to be like, let's get fucking wild.
Yeah.
Let's do some weird shit.
You don't know how far that gate opens once it opens.
And it's like, it was always, I was a bigger drinker in Chicago than LA. Because LA is when I started getting into Coke. And I didn't do that much of it, but it was enough to change things.
You were probably drinking about the same amount, if not more, just the Coke was like reducing the effect. Because I've done that before where it's like, you know, if I knew I was going to have like a really long night of drinking or something like that, I would get Coke just specifically. Because like, actually, one of my buddies, like, I actually told, like, well, I'm the type of person, like, whenever I would literally get like, a dub, we call it a dub sack in Houston, like a 20 sack of cocaine, and little itty bitty amount, and in comparison, and I would literally have it like 4 or 5 days later.
Yeah, I was a bumped guy too.
Yeah, I would take one. Yeah, just take
yes.
Just I'll, to this should get you through that. Like if your drunk gets a little too intense, you take just a little bit, and then you go.
Don't get me wrong, I've railed out plenty.
But if you just don't drink,
yeah,
that's even better.
Yeah. I like doing a couple bumps through the night, like consistent, but like I didn't, but then there's nights where I did a lot, or I'd rail out, or it was like, you know, so it's kind of like the drinking. It's like, I could go out right now, I would go out, have a beer, I'd be fine. A couple beers be fine. A drink be fine. I just don't know when
it'll become a problem. It's like falling off a cliff. It's like, you don't know how far you come until you look back.
Yep. And I'm like, I've done some really awful things drunk and some really amazing things drunk, and I've had a fucking incredible life. So I was like, I've had dinner with the number one person that anybody wants to have dinner with. So I'm like, I've experienced a lot. So now it's
Susan Sarandon?
Close. The hottest gilf on the planet.
Oh, God. No, what are you talking about? Betty White, bro.
So So yeah, I was like, people have asked me that, and I'm like, no, I'm like, I've had some of the most amazing meals of people, and I was like, you know, no, you wouldn't have a drink, no, I'm like, why? It's like, I'll have a pop of them or no duels or coffee. I'd rather have a 4-hour conversation over coffee with some like person I love or respect than get bombed with someone, because I've gotten bombed with so many cool people. It's just like, I've already got it.
It is a rather intimate experience to get bombed with somebody.
It's like, I've done it. So, and my whole attitude's changed. I've gotten older and just more mature and out of that. I've kind of grown out of that mentality because of sobriety, you know, because the way I drank like I was fucking, you know, in college basically sometimes. So, you know, I was 30 years old and I'm like doing, you know, shots like there's no tomorrow and dancing on bars. And I had a crazy fucking mohawk and big scarves and running around the club and just like as a fucking maniac. So it's like I've done it, but I'm like now I'm like what I want to do is build a career. And since California ate shit, I want to do it here. You know,
well, so, I'm certainly glad that you're here, and I'm certainly glad you're alive, man.
Yeah, thanks.
We're going to take ourselves a nice little quick commercial break real quick for these sponsors.
Sweet.
And then we're going to get right back into it. Guys, we'll be right back. And we are back. So there's a lot of stuff coming up. See, I know today, Wednesday, is going to be at the Lucky Duck. I know. You've been to that show, right?
I have not yet.
No? You haven't seen Marty Clark's show?
I guess there? I'll be popping my cherry tonight.
So fucking awesome, dude. Like, yeah. So they have like a lottery style thing. That's like what you were talking about. Yeah. We were talking about that before where I know Marty was kind of reluctant to do it, but it ended up working just because you go, it's fair because like you come in there and you draw your number out of all the comics that come through there. And it is a workshop night pretty much. Yeah. But there actually are patrons that come through there, and you actually have like some people that are relatively a crowd, and it's mics as well. So it's like an opportunity to like not only network, but also like meet everybody, meet the peers, and then also you can test out some of your material as well. And Marty Clark's company, Rough Cut Comedy, is so fucking awesome, dude.
Yeah, like, you introduced me to him, right?
Yeah, I introduced you to Marty
at Shakespeare's.
Yeah,
super cool dude. He's from Wisconsin or Rhode Island or something.
Okay, a really cool guy. Let's see. They had like a show last night, which was the Shane Torres show.
Okay.
That they did over there. It wasn't called the Shane Torres show, but Shane Torres was the headliner.
Okay.
And that was really cool. It was over at Parker's Jazz Club, and I think there was like 50 seats in there.
Okay.
So.
Nice.
But that was a good thing. For if somebody wanted to follow you, like someone wanted to get in contact with you, see your comedy, or get on your website and everything, where would they go?
Right now, the best way to get to follow me or get a hold of me is all my social media is the same, at Trevor Kevalo, T-R-E-V as in Victor, O-R, Kevalo, which is K-E-V as in Victor, E-L-O-H, all together, squished together. If you want to check out the Dojo of Comedy, same thing, at the Dojo of Comedy. Our website is not really going right now. We also have, to anybody that listens, we do have a Dojo of Comedy East that's currently running. That's in New Jersey, about an hour outside of New York City. We have a Dojo of Comedy East, and they're doing shows. They do all outdoor shows. So that's located at Tiff's Ale House. Mike is the owner. He's a friend of ours and obviously our business partner. There is no Dojo of Comedy in LA right now. It's gone. But there will be something here in Austin eventually.
Ooh, I look forward to it.
Which is why I'm here. And there will be pop-up shows of Dojo of Comedy shows before. That's my goal is to do pop-up shows and then find a venue that I can kind of like put my roots into out here. So whether it's kind of adopting the same philosophy we did, in LA, or finding a venue that just gives us like, you know, once a week or whatever it is. So whatever I can do, I can do. And and honest to God, I literally want to just help rebuild comedy in here in Austin.
Absolutely. So that's the exact same thing that I like really is appealing about Rough Cut Comedy, which if you wanted to follow Rough Cut Comedy, you can literally follow them on Instagram. It's Rough Cut Comedy. Rough Cut is one word. What I really like talking about, like all the members of Rough Cut, is that they're very driven to the same thing. They have the same ethos statement, same morals and everything. And like I enjoy people that want to build the scene, make it bigger, because that's my own personal goal, is to just make this Austin into what LA used to be.
Yeah, and it has the potential, you know, and everything I've heard about Austin prior to the shutdown has just been amazing. I've never been here, so this, I mean, I'd never even driven through this town until I moved here, so I really moved here on a whim. A good friend of mine who's a comic out here, Isabel Herman, she used to work for me at Sycamore, and she was my first resident comic at the dojo. Or one of my first resident comics, she's the one that kind of put the seed in my head, you know, earlier this summer. And she's like, you know, she's like, the Austin could use a dojo of comedy. And I thought about it, and, you know, I was preparing to leave LA, and I had a couple different cities I wanted to go to, you know, and I was like, Austin, there's something about it. It's a good art scene, a lot of artists. That what I read, and then, you know, of course, Rogan moving here isn't going to hurt by any means. So I was like, that could be a good spot. So I considered even going to New York or Jersey and help run this club, but I'm like, I've been spoiled with warm weather.
Yeah, stay here.
Yeah, I don't want to go anywhere.
Fuck
cold.
That.
Not to be a bitch, but you know, it's like.
No, I completely agree with you, man.
So, find me Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Trevor Kevalo. Same thing. Actually, this is weird. Our Twitter page got. Deleted and censored by the Twitter gods. I don't know why.
Too many dick pics, bro.
Yeah, we don't send any tweets out that are political. It's all strictly just comedy tweets and like. So, but if you can find us on Facebook and Instagram, it's at the Dojo of Comedy. Our website's not really up and running, so don't bother with that. Yeah, that's where to find myself and the dojo. So.
Oh yeah. Well, I had a great time, man.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
It's a good episode.
Yeah.
Oh, you, your beard, and your eyebrows, bro. Well, I'm certainly glad you're with us. I'm so glad that you came to Austin, man. And I definitely look forward to seeing what you're going to do here and if there's anything I can do to help.
Fuck yeah,
whatsoever. But thank you very much, man.
You got it.
And we did it. See you guys later.